Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain the ultimate remedies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. This is chapter 2 of the 9th chapter. Purport. The faithless cannot accomplish this process of devotional service. That is the purport of this verse. Faith is created by association with devotees. Unfortunate people, even after hearing all the evidence of Vedic literature, from great personalities, still have no faith in God. They are hesitant and cannot stay fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. Thus, faith, the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, one can achieve all perfection. That is called real faith. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Yatha Chura Mula Nishchanena, Shukram Kitat Skanda Kujo Shaka. Kano Baharat Chakritan Vyananam Aiva Sarvanganam Shuteja. By giving water to the root of a tree, one satisfies its branches, twigs, and leaves. And by supplying food to the stomach, one satisfies all the senses of the body. Similarly, by engaging in the transcendental service of the Lord, one automatically satisfies all the demigods and all the living entities. Therefore, after reading the Bhagavad Gita, one should promptly come to the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. One should give up all of their engagements and adopt the service of the Supreme Personality Godhead, Krishna. If one is convinced of this philosophy of life, that is faith. And it's very difficult for those without faith to understand devotional service. And we see that as soon as devotees grow weak in spiritual life, they also lose the ability to understand devotional service. From the external point of view, devotional service looks just like so many other activities. Even seems sometimes to beg a question from our material intelligence. Can this activity, can these activities we're performing really give Krishna? And are they really the essence of spiritual life? These ordinary things that we're doing, driving cars and selling books and cleaning and cooking, can they really be affairs of the internal potency of the Lord? All around us, people are driving, cooking. So many bookstores selling books. So, as we become weak in spiritual life, if that happens, you can notice that the first thing, the first sign, is that the devotee loses appreciation of the exclusiveness and extraordinariness of devotional service. Yet, a devotee who is in the fire of Krishna consciousness appreciates even a seemingly insignificant chance to serve Krishna. Whereas someone who is falling victim again to the looser energy, they just can't seem to engage in devotional service. Everything is a problem. Oh, this is not the right service for me. Oh, this service is not going on properly. Oh, this, and oh, that. But to simply humble oneself, just like King Pratchakaruja did, when the carriers of the Jagannath deity at the Jagannath temple on the day of Ratyatra were carrying Lord Jagannath from the throne to the cart. Lord Jagannath is so heavy that the carriers, they would spread cotton pillows from the throne to the cart, and then they would lift Lord Jagannath from one cotton pillow to the other, resting him on a cotton pillow, because it's too heavy to carry all the way to the cart without stopping. So, when they put when they were putting Lord Jagannath on the cart, the king of Orissa, Maharaj Pratap Rudra, was sweeping the ground in front of Lord Jaya with a broom with a golden handle, doing menial service, even though he was the king. And this way he pleased Lord Jaya, and therefore he got the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Although before, Lord Chaitanya had refused to see him, even though the devotees of Lord Chaitanya had said, "This Pratapurga is such a great devotee. He's so attached to you. Please see him." And Lord Chaitanya said, "See a king? I don't even see kings in dreams." And they kept asking, "Oh, please see King Pratapurga. He's such a great devotee." And finally Lord Chaitanya said, "Do you want me to leave this place? You go on requesting me like this, and I will leave." So finally the devotees stopped requesting. King Pratapurga, by rendering menial service, sweeping the ground in front of Lord Jaya, did receive Lord Chaitanya's association. So, the first symptom that we don't want to see in our spiritual life is when we lose appreciation for the simple acts of devotional service, which, although from the material point of view look so simple, they are incalculable spiritual hooks and spiritual hooks. So here Krishna is saying that those who are not faithful in devotional service cannot attain him. But it's not that if you don't get Krishna, you get nothing. You'll always be something and have something. So if you don't get Krishna, what do you get? Mrityu samsara bhavani. You get the path of repeated birth and death. It's not that, well, so what if I don't get Krishna? I do. If you don't get Krishna, you will get something. So if we want to remain true to being able to get Krishna, we must remain faithful to devotional service. And that means never underestimating the potency of a single act of devotional service. Just like, for example, some of you were distributing books today. Yeah, actually, a remote city on the planet, a remote island on the planet. All the demigods were watching. Certainly. And Sankirtan is performed. All the celestial personalities were watching. And sometimes we can think, "Oh, I'm just doing a few books. What does it matter?" You never know how Krishna will use you. Young devotees reading books, I'd always lament, "Oh, I can only read a few books a day." But then, years later, looking back, I can see that. Compared to others, although I didn't distribute many books at all, so many people became devotees. If they came to the temple, became devotees. Much more so than anyone. So some or other, Krishna has arrangements, we don't know what they'll be. Of course, at that time, I couldn't notice that. I was always lamenting, "Well, why can't I do books like the others?" Krishna was working another way. So, we simply have to try to faithfully serve in devotional service and leave the rest to Krishna. But devotional service cannot be executed by the faithless. They'll easily get discouraged by obstacles and impediments in this world. Yes, it's true. Do not expect Maya to just let you go serve Krishna without impediment. Sometimes you really feel it's such a struggle just to render devotional service. And those times are good for us because they increase our determination. We're tested. We have to show how much we really appreciate just having a simple, ordinary chance to please Krishna. We all think, "Oh, I am so great, I am so talented, I am so this, I am so that." And sometimes Krishna just shows you, no matter what you think about yourself, Just see, you can't even get it together to do a little bit of devotional service. And other times, you think, well, I have no abilities. What can I do? I'm not worthy of doing anything. But then Krishna shows you. Just see, through you, I'll accomplish so much. In either case, all we can do is render sincere, humble devotional service. One who masters that art of rendering sincere, humble devotional service. One who understands the super excellence of devotional service. How you cannot calculate even one, you cannot calculate the value of even one act of devotional service. For that person, there'll always be progress on the path on the way to God, in spite of the obstacles which will come to the material energy. But our love is shown by our determination to carry on, even amidst the impediments. If there's no love that surpasses the impediments, how can you go at love? Anybody can do things when they're easy. That is not anything special. So what is the general preaching atmosphere we're dealing with these days? More and more I'm finding that. Although it's true that not everybody is a hardcore New Age fanatic, the contamination is everywhere. There's no doubt. It's in the ether, so to speak. It's in the atmosphere, and everybody is being sprinkled by these notions. So then what? If you tell somebody that those who are not faithful in devotional service, they won't get Krishna, and they'll get the path, the repeated birth and death, the first thing they'll say is, oh, this is sectarian. There are so many paths. So which path do you want? Oh, there are so many paths. That is a response. We have to hear it below so many times. Not simply from New Age fanatics, but ordinary people. As soon as you try to tell about Krishna, there are so many paths. Well, what path are you following? Oh, no path, but there are so many paths. That's the purpose of God. Just like the fundamentalist Christians will respond, Jesus is the only way. We need to be saved. And similarly, the other people will respond, there are so many paths. There are so many paths. Both are very fanatically held beliefs. Such as friend Wayne was telling me last time I saw it. He actually managed to hold it. He just had it for 20 minutes. It was really a traumatic experience for him to have to hold it. What did he do for 20 minutes? He actually held it and was thinking about it for 20 minutes just for him to get that far. It was the credit for him there. He told me. Wayne is high on everybody's list for traumatic books. Exactly. Shaking a bit, just holding it. Like, let's come over. Let's come over. So, the problem is that as soon as there's something specific, people think, oh, it cannot be spiritual. And as soon as you present something vague, oh, yes, that is spiritual. And then if you tell them, you will return to the path of repeated birth and death in this world, what will they answer? Well, that's just part of the learning process. There's nothing to be fear. No need to fear death. It's just part of learning. And it'll just naturally evolve with the universe. There's no need to make judgments. There's no need to follow any prescribed codes or laws. It's just, life is a learning process. Just fully experience whatever you're doing. If you're going to be depressed, really get into that depressed state and feel it and understand its creative potential. Don't run away from anything. It's all meant for your learning. So in this way, they become so foolish that they think they have no fear of death. they think that these notions that they have in their brain, in their mind, are going to actually give them shelter. Contaminations. These are some contaminations in the present day and age. And it's our duty, I've come to realize more and more, it's our duty as devotees of Krishna to counteract this contamination. I've noticed so many devotees don't understand how all pervasive this contamination is. How westernized Mayavadi philosophy is starting to cover the world. Our own devotees don't understand this. Listening, the last group of going from listening to tapes by Deepak Chopra. And I knew he was a bit out there, but after listening to his tapes, I realized he's a demon. We know that, like, he even says the same thing as Osho, Rajneesh. Too long spiritual traditions have. Have denied the sensuality of the body. The body houses the soul. Therefore, to repress the desires of the body is not good for the soul. Express all the feelings of the body. That will keep the body healthy. And you have to do that because the body houses the soul. And therefore, if you don't absorb yourself in the sensual, in the sensuality of the body, you'll get sick and you're not taking care of the body. And you should take care of the body because the body is housing the soul. I believe you, Anya. And then making some of the statements. We are all God. Just had the number one selling book in the English speaking world. These are the notions that people are getting. Our own devotees sometimes don't understand these contaminations that are in the atmosphere today. It's like when I was speaking in Christ Church. You know, I go there to give Sunday lectures. At first, all the devotees were saying, oh, they're not much into this kind of stuff in Christ Church. Maybe off on there was those kind of notions, but not here in Christ Church. So I remember starting to say, well, maybe that's true, or maybe they just never dug beneath the surface to see what people were really thinking. And I started discussing these things, and lo and behold, same response. Yeah, I've got 10 people telling me how they are the universe. And that when you realize, when you become self-realized, then you can understand that you are everything and everything is you. I mean, 10 people tell me that seriously. And this is the audience that, you know, this is Christ Church. No New Age consciousness there. Then another 10 people telling me, you know, how you should honor all the urges of the body that keeps you well grounded and balanced. So once the devotees, their soul, they seem to come out, they were shocked. They heard us finally. So, these are the contaminations of the time. You've got the dharmas. Battle with these contaminations. In the 70s, late 60s and 70s, Prabhupada was battling with the so many bogus avatars, incarnations, and gurus coming over from India. Now, things have changed a bit. We're back with these westernized mind-body conceptions. No one's into gurus and avatars anymore. Everybody is the divine. Everybody is an avatar. No, you don't need to wait for one to come from India. Everybody is it already. This is the new thing, that everyday spirituality. Just go to any town and any ordinary person. They are God. They are an avatar. This is westernized nihilistic philosophy. Therefore, when you tell people, if you don't get Krishna, you'll get the path of repeated birth and death. They first say, oh, you're being sectarian. And then they think, so what? Repeated birth and death is all part of the learning process. Nature will give you whatever you need. It's like Deepak Chopra was saying. One of the interviewers asked, how do you get all this information? You know about all the latest research into mind-body subject matter. Of course, Brandon Hager had all the gets all the information he can rattle off because he makes so much money, he has a whole staff of researchers. Well, it just seems that whatever I need, nature just, whatever information I need, nature just supplies. Nature just brings me everything. People have this vague trust in the universe and nature. But actually, what is the universe and nature doing to them? Keeping them shackled in birth, death, disease, and old age. But they're so foolish, they don't see the shackles. They just see this whole learning process, giving me just what I need. In one sense, that's true. You are getting just what you need, but you're not supposed to need that. And you're not supposed to experience that. If you want to learn, you learn through devotional service. That's the learning process. Not the Mrityu Samsara Varpani. You cannot learn in the material energy. You can only learn in the internal potency. The external potency deludes. It's no question of learning. Knowledge is provided by the internal spiritual potency.
So how do we connect this picture of what we think is spiritual and isn't actually spiritual, it's just the mind and material nature?
And you have to learn the philosophy. Just like I'm saying. I'm teaching you,
right?
That I'm faithful in devotional service. Why? Because faith means, as defined by Lord Chaitanya, Krishna Bhakti Kali Sarva. Simply by serving Krishna, everything is taken care of. If you don't have that faith, Shraddha Shravde Vishvaskarve, Churyudan Nishchoya. If you don't have that firm conviction that simply by serving Krishna everything will be taken care of, then it means lack of faith. And therefore your devotional service wavers. Because you can't believe that simply by serving Krishna everything will be taken care of.
So the symptoms of the devotee is like that. What did they, he said the first thing they do is they don't appreciate the
right. They start becoming Christians. They believe in Krishna. No serve, no service, or very little service. But they believe. They have belief in mean Krishna. Yes. But the devotional service, they're very weak on.
Well, it's possible for them to be actually performing activities, but it's not devotional because
there's always some degree of bhakti when it's performing authorized devotional activities. There's always some bhakti. no doubt about
it. It's always true.
Yes. But we are trying to please Krishna favorably, that means without any ulterior motives. Devotional service is rendered in accordance with the Vedic literatures, otherwise the Goswami says it's a disturbance to society. There are 9 classes of devotional service. A lot of those experience. One is always a servant. If you don't serve Krishna, do you think you stop serving? Everybody at every moment is a servant. You cannot give that up. It's like Carrie was telling me how she would serve the shoe store by buying so many shoes. It's service. Shoes into shoes. That's a good thing. That's very good motive. Yes, that's intelligence. But later they'll become so purified that they don't care whether Sadhguru Chaitanya says, Mama Jamini Jamini Iswade, birth after birth, none of my taking. As long as Baba Tan Bhakti, I'll wait to keep away and have a chance for devotional service to you.
So fear is limited.
Yes. Fear is good. But bhakti leads to love, to service to Krishna based on love. But first you understand how Krishna is controlling everything. Now, even a pure devotee who is performing devotional service out of love fears material contamination. Just like Devaki's fear of Kamsa, that fear purified her, so to speak, and therefore she was able to give birth to Krishna because of her fear of material association. She was able to bring about bhakti. So Prabhupada writes in the purport that the pure devotee is always fearing material association, material contamination. And of course, as we've heard so many times, Prabhupada once said, the only difference between him and his disciples was that he was always praying to Krishna, please let the people know. To feel completely dependent on Krishna, like a child depends on his parent. That is our right frame of consciousness. So when we feel this sense of self-confidence, yes, I know what I'm doing, I'm okay, but confident, that is the gift of the Lord. A real devotee always feels weak and dependent on Krishna. Of course, Krishna is also. Change every year, you know. One devotee would see when you get a new technique and start doing more, and everybody else would copy. And ultimately, you realize it's just Krishna, it's not the technique. But in the beginning, some technique, some mantra is required. Generally, most people. But looking back, I can see, you know, every 2 months there's a new technique. technique, and you're always watching to see who's doing more books than you think it's in the technique. Some techniques require to do anything, of course. And techniques require to tie your shoes. Techniques require to drive a car. So we're not callous towards technique, but in order to be elevated to the supreme position. Understand? Naturally, you want to distribute as many books as possible. If the technique helps you do that, then why not do it? And then gradually over the years, Krishna will give you intelligence how to personalize your own technique. So much so that ultimately the technique becomes a very intimate part of you, so it looks like no technique.
For me, actually, when I'm doing devotional service, if you don't always feel like doing something, you don't always feel like doing something. You don't always feel like going out to do a box or doing particular devotional service. Sometimes, does this mean that you're losing interest in service?
Service is done out of duty, not whether you feel like it or not. The last thing you want is that your Krishna consciousness is based on whatever you feel. That's the mind. Duty is the foundation of Krishna consciousness. And then by executing service based on duty, your natural attraction to Krishna will awaken as soon as you do it out of a spontaneous desire. Without the duty stage, we'll never get to the next stage. Just like you didn't want to go to school at first, you didn't like school at first, but your parents said you must do this for your future. So you went to school and some people started to like it. I still remember when I went to my first day going to school, sitting on some neighbor was driving me and was sitting on her lap. As soon as we came inside of the school, I was announced, "This is the school I do not like." I remember saying, as if, "This is the school I do not like." Then 4 years later, when a Lutheran school, my mother transferred me to public school, and it was such a disaster. I liked the school so much. So in the beginning, we act on duty. Never mind what we feel. The people are suffering out there. Naturally, you want to help them. They're suffering. If you don't help them, who will? I may not like to try to understand all the different contaminations, but out of duty, I do it. It'd be so nice just to read Chaitanya Charitamrita and forget all these things. Out of duty. Find out, what are these people? What's driving them so crazy? Gives me all the nectar. That's my thing. evening from having a look at a lot of other books. These are all the nectar that everybody's thinking these days, all from the layman's guide to the New Age. But you'd be shocked. It's, when you hear it, it's just what everybody's thinking. That's such a horrible thing about it. Everybody's thinking these things. The powers of the universe are poised to take you and humanity on a great adventure. It will change the world all around you. Your help is needed, but first you must find yourself. We are the universe's great experiment to create the perfect marriage between the physical and spiritual. You chose to come here to be a part of it. Nothing about your progress is predestined. Only one being is responsible for your progress, and is you. The world is our school for our spiritual progress. You will eventually rise above it to a higher plane, but for now, there are lessons still to be learned. Respect those who embrace God through religion, whichever creed they follow. What they hold to be good is essentially true, even though their understanding may seem obscure by dogma. But be aware that much of religion has been diverted into forms of mass manipulation for many generations. Many religious messages in use today were intended for an earlier period. Their meaning has been passed by. They have now little relevance. Isn't this what everybody's thinking? Vital and original wisdom that was intended for us all has long been buried by human theology. We were not asked by any great spiritual leader to raise up a priesthood in a hierarchy and form a religion. Power to control huge numbers of people is vested in religious structures. Priests can thus assume greater importance than the message they bring. You give away your power when you allow others to intercede on your behalf in this way. Ritual and religion has also assumed a false importance of its own. It serves only to distance us from the truth. Same old Maya with a new covering on it. It serves only to distance us from the truth.
The section for the men?
Yep.
Well, how can they break the men?
That's the amazing thing about it. Look at everything. This is the names of the sections. The invitation, a painful progression, soul, purpose, connections, finding peace, religion, karma, spiritual progress, intuition and creativity, health and body, dying, fear, ego and emotion, love, interrelationships, parting, children. There's a ton of
parting.
Parting is part of relationship. You question it.
It's very strong. before you speak.
There are many new religious sects emerging and gathering energy. Their powerful appeal will attract large numbers of people. Their high level of commitment represents positive progress. They bring many new people to spirit, but look for pure intention and great integrity in such groups. Manipulation and suppression of individuality remain a danger. Have no time for the manipulative cleric or religious zealot. Their attitudes and teachings will not contribute to your spirituality. Select carefully that which you are prepared to embrace. Invoke discernment and, above all, develop your own truth. For if you merely follow others by rote, you are too open to manipulation. Rather, trust your instinct. If you are true to yourself in matters of the spirit, you will find that you are often right. Then your progress will be rapid. This is demoniac. This is demoniac. It's not motor goodness, this is demoniac. The whole book is supposed to have been channeled. What kind of people they're in contact with? This is what Krishna's talking about in the 16th chapter of the Gita. Demoniac nature. Rejecting any spiritual authority, rejecting any spiritual law. Enjoy your religion if you have one, but remember that your path to understanding is yours alone. Karma, as I've been saying in Bhagavatam class recently, karma and reincarnation are no longer strange concepts. They're actually almost mainstream, but it is people. What people are into is secular karma and secular reincarnation, godless reincarnation and godless karma. Karma means that they accept every action as a reaction, but you decide, you're the judge. They refuse to accept some kind of universal standard or lawgiver. At the same time, they think they accept karma. Just like this whole chapter on karma talks about how every action has a reaction. But there's no standard. There's the money.
Also, we're talking about karma, we really don't get enough information. Obviously, through scripture. In a sense, and it must have come around through scriptures to get some of the ancient one, otherwise they wouldn't know that. And this just appeared to them in their mind through channeling.
There's the perennial philosophy, as they call it, found in so many scriptures of the world. A guru may be followed. Philosophy emerges as a component of spiritual thinking. A monastic or hermetic element enters the individual's way of being. This stage is about following others in search of an answer. There will be many blind alleys and wrong turnings. Painful experience guides the spiritual warrior through many such lessons. The battle-scarred warrior will eventually learn that truth comes only from within. He can then move on. At the next level, the guru is finally abandoned, and the initiative emerges.
Sounds like Joseph
Intuition is the voice of your soul. It is used as a key step in your fulfillment. The universe holds the answers that you seek. With care and attention to your intuitive connections, you will receive valuable guidance.
Where did you find this book?
I found it at the problem is, this is not, it's not New Age. This is what most everybody's thinking these days. This is a problem. It's a disgusting thing. It's no longer, I mean, 20 years ago, this would be just a narrow section of society, but this contamination has spread everywhere. Even the most people who say they're not New Age, you don't think these things. The act of dying at the end of this life will be a great relief to you, and it is perfectly safe. You will go home to rest and review what you have achieved. Love. Love is love, the universe's baseline. The love you show yourself is the deciding factor in love you can give to others. First, you must learn to love yourself. You are a creature of great complexity and potential. You are magnificent. So take time to appreciate who and what you are. Hold in awe the fact of your own being. Giving proper love of yourself, then you can love any person, group, or life form. The possibilities are unlimited. See, you have people's minds are totally, their heads are screwed on wrong. Hold in your mind that if your partner truly loves you, any relationship they have with another does not threaten you. Jealousy will always damage you and never enhance the relationship you have. With mutual agreement and caring, you may even find fulfillment with more than one partner, but only in the context of love and not one of greed. But at the same time, you will find no joy in continual promiscuity. Moderation. Who's the judge of moderation? What's too much promiscuity and what's okay promiscuity? There's no standard except use your intuition. I won't read. Parting. A relationship is like a bank balance for emotions. Give and take on an equal basis with your partner, all should be well. But if you are hopelessly overdrawn, your partner must eventually foreclose. Give a new partnership enough time to mature, but should your expectations turn out to be far apart, it's fair to walk away.
You're actually
saying I've been giving a video on this book. If a relationship gives you constant pain, all reconciliation has failed, and little pleasure remains. Let it go.
It just says, Joseph. Most of your suffering will come to your life.
Both of you have benefited from your time together, but personal growth has ceased, and the pressures of the fast-moving world have taken them in different directions. Think well of those who you have loved in the past. If they were as bad as you may now imagine, how do you rate your own wisdom in so choosing? It's just a demoniac. From every angle, your absorption in simple activity is supported with eloquence. From every angle. Be ready to celebrate the positive aspects of the relationship you are leaving. If you have been badly hurt by the failure of past relationships, it is not necessary or healthy to withdraw into loneliness or celibacy for long. Devise a personal recovery plan, for it is beneficial to return to intimacy in good partnerships. Children. Our children are not ours to keep. They are merely lent to us for a few short years. They are sent to teach us. Many an old soul now lives in the young body. The child you love has been here many times. Basically, it just says, learn from the children. Let the children do whatever they want to do and, you know, worship them. You know. When your children are ready to leave, you must be willing to let them go and help them on their way. They are souls on a journey, just as you are. That's really the sentiment of the education of children. They have natural trust, unconditional love, they have their intuition, so you should learn from your children. Just let them run wild and watch what they're doing and learn from it. Abundance and wealth. You are responsible for your own wealth generation. The universe will provide abundantly if you hold yourself open to receive it. Do not detract from the genuine wealth creators. Many industries are past their time and must be replaced by new activities. But to see what they're doing is skillfully rationalizing every form of materialism, just recasting it in this sickly, sweet, so-called philosophy. Make money, be promiscuous, ignore your children, whatever. This time it's new because it's being spoken, these directions are being given in a new way. Same old Maya with a new covering on it. By using your gifts of intuition and creativity to generate wealth, you can achieve comfort, satisfaction, even luxury without the disapproval of the universe. For spiritual progress does not require you to give up worldly goods and live in poverty. To do so may be pious, but it is to deny the bounty of the universe which is there for your use. This is a demon. This is demoniac. Your purpose is to be the perfect blend between the physical and the spiritual. Take full advantage of both. Live in and share your abundance. Thank you. say, it'd be great if this was only a New Age book followed by quote unquote New Age people, but unfortunately I find everybody contaminated by this book. Even people come to Christian consciousness, they get contaminated by this. You gotta do your own thing within Krishna consciousness and kind of look out for your own fulfillment and don't commit yourself too much to anything and get in touch with yourself and then you can be balanced and then you can do devotional service.
Well, one devotee told me I had to bring in the news.
Anyway, these things are going on. Therefore, I always stress the worship service. The worship service, I haven't done this. And those who have faith in the worship service can have it. So yes, like I say, I've come to the conclusion, it would be great if this was only a small segment of the population, but I see this thing is affecting everybody. I hear this from everybody. Everybody believes everybody's got the wrong thing. Everybody can look at it. Everybody believes specific spiritual knowledge is sectarian. And it's actually unconsciously discouraged a lot of devotees in preaching, because you see, when we preached in the end of the 60s and 70s, Krishna consciousness had like a monopoly on things like karma and reincarnation, and he could really catch people's minds with those concepts, but not anymore. In fact, the demons have taken these concepts and made them totally godless. So we really have to pray to Krishna for intelligence, distribute these books, and a lot of work to do. I see it unconsciously made devotees very sluggish in their preaching, because 20 years ago, 15 years ago, you could just go out there and start talking about reincarnation, karma, even vegetarianism, and you'd be unique. And people would, Krishna's, they're the ones who talk about vegetarianism, reincarnation, karma. Not anymore. Everybody's into that. There's a greater chance of finding people who are, not into those things, as you said, in the small towns. Much greater chance. But I'm speaking about a subtle effect that I see on so many of our devotees, that they kind of don't know what to do when they're deprived of their traditional weapons of, being recognized for as being unique for being able to talk about karma or the reincarnation or vegetarianism, I noticed a subtle effect which made our creatures less outgoing. You don't know, but 15 years ago, if you would talk about, 20 years ago, if you would talk about reincarnation, I mean, so to speak, the effect would be people would actually just, they would think you're talking about Martians from another planet or something.
I don't know.
Such an effect you have. So we're being forced to become more pure. Krishna consciousness is not about simply giving metaphysical knowledge, it's about conveying the attractiveness of Krishna. Pure soul and pure consciousness with the material body. That relationship is just like a dreamer's seeing his own body working. A versus, as a young devotee. It's very relevant for preaching purposes. Purport. Maharaj Pritchett's question as to how a living entity began his material life, although he is apart from material body and mind, is perfectly answered. The spirit soul is distinct from the material conception of his life, but he is absorbed in such a material conception because of being influenced by the external energy of the Lord, called Atmamaya. This has already been explained in the first canto, in connection with Vyasadeva's realization of the Supreme Lord and his external energy. The external energy is controlled by the Lord, and living entities are controlled by the external energy, by the will of the Lord. Therefore, although the living entity is purely consciousness, pure state, he is subordinate to the will of the Lord and being influenced by the external energy of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita also, the same thing is confirmed. The Lord is present within the heart of every living entity, and all living entities' consciousness and forgetfulness are influenced by the Lord. Now the next question automatically will be made, why the Lord influences the living entity for such consciousness and forgetfulness? The answer is that the Lord clearly wishes that every living entity be in his pure consciousness as part and parcel of the Lord, and thus be engaged in the loving service of the Lord, as he is constitutionally made. But because the living entity is partially independent also, he may not be willing to serve the Lord, but may try to become as independent as the Lord is. All the non-devotee living entities are desirous of becoming equally as powerful as the Lord, although they are not fit to become so. The living entities are illusioned by the will of the Lord because they want to become like him. Like a person who thinks of becoming a king without possessing the necessary qualifications, when a living entity desires to become the Lord himself, he is put in the condition of dreaming that he is a king. Therefore, the first sinful will of the living entity is to become the Lord. And the consequent will of the Lord is that the living entity forget his factual life and this dream of a land of utopia, where he may become one like the Lord. The child cries to have a moon from the mother, and the mother gives the child a mirror to satisfy the crying and disturbing child with the reflection of the moon. Similarly, the crying child of the Lord is given over to the reflection, the material world, to lord it over as a karmi, and to give up this in frustration to become one with the Lord. Both these stages are dreaming illusions only. There is no necessity of tracing out the history of when the living entity desired this. But the fact is that as soon as he desired, he was put under the control of Atmamaya by the direction of the Lord. Therefore, the living entity in his material condition is dreaming falsely that this is mine and that this is I. The dream is that the conditioned soul thinks of his material body as I, or falsely thinks that he is the Lord, and that everything is in connection with the material body is mine. Thus, only in dream does the misconception of I and mine persist life after life. This continuous life after life, as long as the living entity is not purely conscious of his identity as subordinate part of the process of the Lord. This continues life after life, as long as the living entity is not purely conscious of his identity as subordinate part of the process of the Lord. In his pure consciousness, however, there is no such misconceived dream. And in that pure conscious state, the living entity does not forget that he is never the Lord, but that he is eternally the servant of the Lord in the transcendental life. Okay, unless one is influenced by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no meaning to the relationship of the pure soul and pure consciousness with the material body. That relationship is just like a dreamer's seeing his own body working. We all have experience of dreaming, and in the dream, we can see ourselves doing so many things. But when you wake up, you realize that dream body that you saw was insubstantial. The example given here by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Pritchett, that the relationship between the body and the pure soul is just like the relationship between you sleeping and seeing your dream body. Of course, when you're dreaming, you really identify with what you're doing. But when you wake up, then you understand it was only a dream. It was insubstantial. If it was a nightmare, you feel good if you woke up. And if it was a so-called pleasant dream, you feel bad that you woke up. How is it that pure soul becomes under the influence of the material body, or identifies with the material body? Shukadeva Goswami here is telling you, it's not possible that such a thing can happen unless there is some intervening factor. What is that intervening factor? That is the external energy of Krishna. Otherwise, there's no way that pure spirit soul will identify with the material energy. You see, the whole point is that we are subordinate. Although we are purely spiritual in our natural condition, we are subordinate. And this is what causes the problem with people's understanding today. They simply talk that, oh, we are all pure spirit. But there's no talk of subordination. There's no talk of being under the supreme controller. It's just, once you're spiritual, then you're free. You do have whatever you like. And Goswami is implicitly explaining in this verse is that even in your pure spiritual condition, you're simply the energy of Krishna, by Krishna's will, the pure spiritual energy can become covered by the external energy. Therefore, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Mamayavam Sho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Tanatama Manasasthan and Yani Parthasan Parthasan. The living entities in this world, they are my eternal fragments of parts. Amsha. You can't get away from that. Whether you're pure spirit soul or a conditioned soul, you are Krishna's part. You cannot be the controller. And you cannot be all-powerful like Krishna, because you're so tiny. And this is what people really don't want to hear. And you can understand that. The last thing they want to hear is how they are subordinate. This way, that way, this way, that way, they try to get around their subordinate condition. If you lead them to organized religion, the traditional religion, church-going religion, they'll sing hymns all day long about God is so great and Jesus loves you, but they will not submit to the will of God. Or, once they get burned out in organized religion, they go into so-called alternative forms of spirituality. And once again, the same thing is they have no concept of subordination to the Supreme Lord. So this is why Krishna consciousness seems so heavy. Because we are shaking up everybody, or we should be shaking up everybody. Organized religion is useless without surrender to the will of God. So-called alternative spirituality is also useless without understanding one's subordination to the laws of Krishna. That is Dharma. So we are presenting what everybody doesn't want to hear, whether they are organized religious or alternative spiritual so-called. No one wants to hear that they must submit to the laws of God. Especially these days, as soon as you talk like that, people say, oh, you must be from Iran. You're for imposing religious laws on people. In this way, humanity is rapidly sinking below the animal level because they don't want any kind of spiritual regulation above them. Nothing. Because each person has his own truth. But there is no branch of material knowledge in which each person makes up his own truth. When you go to university, you study, and you are given knowledge, and you must demonstrate your competence in that knowledge. So that is true of insignificant material things. So why should it not be true of spiritual things? Why should, if you want to be a computer engineer, you must learn the authorized knowledge, the authorized system, and display your competence in that knowledge. But when it comes to spiritual life, whatever you think, that's what the system is. That's what's important. There is no branch of knowledge in the material world that is realized according to the whims of the student. So in the material sense, people like authorized knowledge. Yes, this is the best book for learning about this computer program. This is the best book for teaching how to ski. This is the best book for teaching sense gratification. This is the best book on relationships. But for spiritual knowledge, the door is wide open. Whatever you think. And once again, the main problem is that people do not understand their subordination. And as we were discussing yesterday, the people you'll meet fall into two basic categories. Those who don't think at all and don't care, we don't know. They just think, well, looks like we're the body. Anyway, don't think about it too much. Just enjoy the body. And those in the category of the thinkers who just speculate. Everything is spiritual. You define what is spiritual. In both cases, the problem is no knowledge of subordination. How people are controlled, how living entities are controlled at every step. No understanding of subordination. No understanding that we are living in a system that has completely controlled us. And people in category one think, oh, there's no point in worrying about that. Just deal with what you can see immediately and try to enjoy. And people in category two, oh, we are pure spirit. Once you realize that, then there's no restrictions, no limitations. So this way, everybody's suffering from the basic ignorance of refusal to accept Dharma, the laws of the Supreme. That is the basic problem. That's why Prabhupada, again and again and again and again, defined religion as the laws of God. In other words, what's the using point of a Christian if you're not following the laws of God? Religion is not a matter of belief, it's a question of following laws. This is our great contribution to the world, making that point. But you may believe in the government of New Zealand, but if you break the laws, you'll go to jail. So what's the use in believing in Jesus if you don't follow the law? So whether people are in the ignorant bodily category, so don't think ignorance, what you don't know can't hurt you, or whether they're in the speculator category, we are pure spirit, realize that, and there's no limitation to you. They're all suffering from this heavy covering of Maya, in which they cannot see their subordinate condition. Of course, such consciousness never goes on without huge disturbance. You've never seen a time when such consciousness goes on without huge disturbance. Whether people are ignorant, not willing to think about anything, or whether they are New Age speculators, never has there been a time when ignorance can go on without disruption. Nature will show them who is in control. Again and again, nature does this. Nature, if you're naked, that's the energy of Krishna. There is no hope of pacifying material nature in any other way than to pacify Krishna. People are very proud and puffed up. They think that they've actually mastered nature to some degree. That notion is always put, is always kicked out periodically. Nature will always show itself to be the agent of Krishna for pounding on the head of stubborn atheists. That will not change. So we should not allow ourselves to become lulled to sleep by the dense ignorance existing there, in which people do not want to be subverted. Do not want to recognize their limited nature. Do not want to recognize how they are under control. But here in this verse, Sukadeva Goswami is pointing out that you are so much under control that even though you are pure spirit soul, you are identifying with material body. How can that happen? Because you're under control. There's no other explanation. And this is what these the speculators can't understand. If they're pure spirit soul, why are they identifying with the body? How did that happen? Generally their answer is the universe wanting to experience takes on the human form. Yes, they do. It was actually a book I was reading, also for that. I hear it again and again. The unlimited, in order to have fun, takes on the limited. So if we just realize that actually we're not limited, we're unlimited, then we live happily ever after. But if we're actually unlimited, why do we have to go through any endeavor to be become unlimited again, or realize that we're unlimited. Why do we need instruction? Why do we need to hear from anybody? How do we forget? Why do I need you to tell me that I'm unlimited? And certainly if I'm unlimited, don't I have better things to do than engage in the foolish activities of human beings do? It's really amazing. These people actually think that the activities of human beings, they are so wonderful that, you know, it's quite an accomplishment for pure spirit soul to want to do these human activities. They explain it like, yes, the universe wants to experience human activities, the limited. As if what the human beings are doing is so great. But as you can see, there's something says here. There's no way that pure spirit soul would want to have anything to do with the material body unless there's a third intervening factor, and that is Maya. Maya is subordinate to Krishna, and the pure spirit soul is subordinate to Krishna. Whether you're conditioned or pure, you are subordinate to Krishna. Ekale Ishvara Krishna Par Sarva Bhuta. There is one controller, Krishna, all else are his servant. So we hear the very wonderful example of purport. The child cries to have the moon from the mother. And the mother gives the child a mirror to satisfy the crying and disturb the child with the reflection of the moon. Similarly, the crying child of the Lord is given over to the reflection, the material world. We have been given over to the reflection, by the will of Krishna. And this reflection is so powerful, so mesmerizing, so hypnotic. Why were we given over? Because we wanted to, and we would not listen otherwise. Very interesting to analyze ourselves and see how we desire to become as powerful as the Lord. That is the root cause of conditional life. To actually see that is how I want to be as powerful as Krishna, in control and in enjoyment. I want to imitate Krishna. This is the psychological root of material existence. And this is what Krishna consciousness deals with, the basic belief. Everyone else skirts this issue of the desire of the living entity to be all powerful. In Krishna consciousness, we know we cannot be all powerful. But if we surrender to Krishna in pure bhakti, actually bhakti is more powerful than Krishna. Everybody wants to be God. But God is falling around in the backyard of Nanda Maharaj on all fours. And sometimes grabs the tail of calves and gets dragged all over Vrindavan through mud and cows down in cow yard. Not all the residents of Vrindavan watch. The great heroes. And then they worry. The mothers, the older gopis, and Krishna's mother worry, oh, have to be mindful, we don't want Krishna to get in any trouble. There's so many things around here, monkeys, fire, sharp objects. Just be careful about Krishna. This way, all these soda enemies all their devotees they think a superior role to Krishna. They want to protect him. They scold him. They teach him to protect him. Finally, we read in the last paragraph of the book. In his pure consciousness, however, there is no such discontinued dream. What we think is material existence. Reality. That is simply a misconceived dream. Thus only in dream does the misconception of I am I persist life after life. So once that misconception of I am I is gone, does that mean now you are the universe, now you are the unlimited? No, once the misconception disappears, then we awaken to our identity as servant of Krishna. Actually, as pointed out in the purport, the desire to be one with everything, that is a continuation of the I am mind illusion. Okay, unless one is influenced by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no meaning in the relationship of the pure soul and pure consciousness with the material body. That relationship is just like a dreamer's seeing his own body working. What supplies the meaning in this world? The illusory energy. Without that intervening factor, there's no possibility of pure spirit soul identifying with your body. People are talking, find the meaning, look for the meaning of life. So, what's giving the meaning? The smile. Always good to talk about Maya. You notice amongst the speculators, they don't know what Maya is. And as soon as they start to talk about Maya, if they ever do, or if they start listening to you talk about Maya, the illusion, then they're trapped. Because where does the illusion come from? And why are we under illusion? How did it happen? Then we got them. You can, with logic and reason, show that they're not the body. Yes, they've identified with the body. Because with logic and reason, you can show that you're not your down coat. And with, through logic and reason, you can show them you're not the body. And some of them will say these days, yes, 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 we know we're not the body. But before, you did think you were the body. How is that? And now, even though you, quote unquote, know you're not the body, how come you still act like you're the body? Well, the body encourages the soul, and the body must be taken care of. And the teacher of Christ Church, yes, it's true, the body is different from the soul, but unless you go through the mind, you can't get to the soul. So first you've got to go through your body and all that it asks of you. And then, once you do that, then there can be some access to the soul, a real destination. But this guy, I'm so close, he'll never get to the soul. He'll just take up lowest forms of life, right after birth.
This reminds me of that when Shira Swami talks about this. When he says, in order for the soul to be in Maya, he has to go through a stage of a fuzzy consciousness that he's trying to survive.
That's
meditating.
That's easy. This is very clear. Unless one is influenced by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no meaning to relate to the pure soul and to the passion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As explained in the third count, it is the false ego that accomplishes this, or is the junction, imaginary junction between that and the spirit of the false ego. The spirit, soul, and material body never connect, but there is an imaginary junction between the two that enables the hallucination of connection. So these are the two problems today. First of all, the people who have done what I have said don't think at all about these things. And then the people who do think about these things will have all the wrong answers. This is how great ignorance is today. 20 years ago, you were just dealing with masses of people who never thought about these things. Now you've got those people, and then masses of people who do think about these things. And both are wrong. So it requires more preaching than ever. No time for laying back. Oh, people are becoming more interested in business areas and spirituality. Same old ignorance, just two different categories now.